The Mooney Show on RTE Radio 1.
It's a dry, sunny Saturday morning as we strut along the streets en route to Pioneer Plaza, where the city's origin and early settlers are commemorated. The park features native plants, a flowing stream, and a recreation of a cattle drive in larger-than-life bronze with longhorn steers being driven by three cowboys on horses. Now, who's written all that stuff? Oh, it's Eddie Rowley from the Sunday World. And in tomorrow's Sunday World magazine, you'll see a picture of myself in a Stetson sitting on a saddle. Oh my God, I look ridiculous on the cover. And then there's a big article inside because we were making a documentary about Robert Mazel, the country singer, which you can hear on RT Radio 1 over the Christmas period. And it is absolutely fascinating. Robert goes back because he's actually from a place called Shreveport in Louisiana. He came here, God knows how many years ago, don't want to give his age away, but more than two decades ago, and has been here ever since. And the one thing he never really did when he was growing up in Louisiana in Shreveport was sing. And Louisiana is famous for singers. It's the kind of the place, one of the places, next to Nashville. But at any rate, we went back there to make a documentary series with him, which you can hear on RT Radio 1, and it was in association with the Sunday World. So we, while we were there, we did a little feature, which is in tomorrow's magazine of the Sunday World, all about Dallas. So if you're looking for a place to go maybe on holidays next year, you might consider that. Now, Daily Mail agony aunt Belle Mooney knows a thing or two about heartache, and not just from the letters she receives from readers. She suffered a terrible bereavement with the stillbirth of one of her children, and her 35-year marriage to television journalist Jonathan Dimbleby broke down following his affair with opera singer Susan Chilcott. Despite those experiences, she was not prepared for the massive impact that the death of her Maltese dog Bonnie would have on her. In her new book, Goodbye Pet and See You in Heaven, a memoir of animals, love and loss, she says that it's not silly to grieve for a pet like a loved one. I spoke to Belle Mooney during the week when she popped into the BBC studios in Bath.
I live 6 miles outside Bath, and this is the centre of the universe, apart from Dublin, of course.
Yeah, well, Dublin's the capital of the world, as you probably know. I'm sure you've been here tons of times, have you?
I love Dublin. Dublin was where my great-grandfather was born.
Oh, I see.
Great-grandfather Mooney, he was a carter. And then he moved to Liverpool, like so many people did. And, of course, my granddad was born in Liverpool. And my granddad used to say, all those Mooney's pubs in Dublin, they should have been ours. I know. I like the name. It's, well, it's different, isn't it? Well, it's different if you're in England. And there are lots of Mooney's in Ireland, aren't there?
Oh, yeah. Everywhere you look. Go around a corner. I'm not responsible for any of them, I can assure you. Anyway, we're going to talk about your new book, Goodbye Pet and See You in Heaven, yes. A memoir of animals, love and loss. Tell me all about it.
Well, what happened was in 2002, mm-hmm. I adopted a rescue dog from the RSPCA Cat and Dogs Home in Bath. She was a little white fluff ball, and I called her Bonnie. And she was at my side for nearly 14 years, and I just loved that dog. And then last November, coming up to a year ago now, November the 4th, she died of a heart murmur and old age. I mean, she was getting on for 14. And I was absolutely desolate. Now, anybody listening to this will know when you've got a dog and your dog gets old, or a cat, mind you, people mm-hmm. love their pets. You know, you start to think, well, I'm going to prepare for this, you know. And I thought, I'm an advice columnist in the Daily Mail. I'm in touch with my feelings. I advise people on bereavement, including pet bereavement. I've had letters about it. I know how I'm going to feel. I didn't, Derek. I was knocked sideways with grief. And I couldn't. I had to work. But a few weeks afterwards, one of my colleagues on the Mail said, you know, I think you should write about it. I said, I don't want to. But then a little bit after that, I thought, I do want to. I want to talk about these feelings because that's my stock in trade, you know, talking about feelings. So I wrote a piece. And of course, you can guess what I'm going to say. The response was enormous. Mm. All of readers writing to me about
people
how
love
much
their
they
pets.
Love. They love their pets. And then how full of grief they were afterwards. And then, even more than that, how they felt that other people don't get it. They think it's silly. It's only a dog. It's only a cat. You know, it's not like a human. Of course, it's not like a human. So they felt almost ashamed of going on grieving. And it was at that point that my publisher said to me, do you know what, Belle? I think you should write a book because I think, A, you'll tell your own story. B, it might help people. And that was the genesis of the book.
Bonnie was a rescue dog. Do you know the background, the history to Pony?
She was left tied to a tree in a park in Bath. We got lucky, both of us, Bonnie and I, because we fell in love with each other.
Why do you think that happened?
There was something about this little creature who was like a baby. Now, here's another. That's an interesting area, isn't it? You know, I was mummy. I mean, I bet there's lots of women listening to this who they say, come to mummy, if it's that little dog, you know, or big dog. Doesn't matter, you're mummy. That's not stupid. That's just how we are with our pets. But maybe that my kids had grown up and left home. So maybe this was another little baby coming my way. Do you know what I mean? So there is that. I can't explain it. There's some things. I'm sure you're a rationalist, Derek.
Well,
there are some things
I have
which
a rash
are beyond,
at the moment.
They're beyond explanation.
But I mean, I wonder where the other dogs, somebody else's dogs, you mentioned your ex-husband. So had it to do with that you didn't love them as much as Bonnie was a new start? Bonnie was Bonnie a replacement? I mean, if somebody wrote you a letter like this, you'd be addressing it. You know, is the dog a replacement for my former lover, for my previous husband, my previous wife? You know, that's the kind of letter you might get, actually.
Yeah, no, because,
so I'm asking you now, was it a replacement for Jonathan Dimbleby?
No, because he loved her too. So it was a year later that he left. So now and then I have a new husband, and he loved her too. She was a very lovable dog. That's what she was. No mystery to that. She was lovable. Everybody loved her. And of course, she became a famous dog because I wrote 6 children's books inspired by her. Big Dog Bonnie, Bad Dog Bonnie, Best Dog Bonnie. And, you know, so she, and I used to, there was a time when I would go through the Bath and I'd hear little children go, there's Bonnie, which is very sweet. And I had a business card made for her, which was obviously marketing because it had the books listed on it, you know. But children love to get this card with a picture of Bonnie on it. And then my first memoir was called A Small Dog Saved My Life. And that was about my divorce. And it was all about how dogs really do see you through bad times. And so, you know, Bonnie was my inspiration as well as my little friend.
People often say that if they have a pet, if they have a dog and they're going for a walk, it's a great way of starting a conversation.
Ah, they're the best. They're just best, these animals. They have so much to teach us. And, I mean, Bonnie set me on that learning curve. And as I explain in the book, I'm still learning. And I believe we have an enormous amount to learn from animals. And in our human arrogance, we shut that off, that knowledge. But I'm open to it, and I owe it all to Bonnie.
So that time when you were told that Bonnie had a heart murmur, what was that like for you? Was it very difficult?
Well, I said, I remember having my public voice on. I have a public voice. You're listening to it now. It's very calm. But in the privacy of the vet's room, I don't need to use a public voice. But I said to the vet, very calmly, well, I realise I have to start preparing for the end of her life. And she said, yes, it's a difficult one for people. And we smiled at each other, and I was very calm. So I picked up Bonnie, shaking as she was. She didn't like going to the vet. Who does, you know? I mean, I don't like going to the vet.
Dogs don't like it at all.
No, they don't.
They
I sense
it.
In the car, and I started blubbing quietly in the car, you know. But then I thought, no, got medicine. She's going to be all right. She's good for another 2 years. But that wasn't to be. But the thing was that when the end came, it came so quickly and at home and in my arms. I couldn't have wished for a better end for my little babe. You know, it was just wonderful.
You were there when she took her last breath, quite literally.
She literally took her last breath. And I was talking to her. And there's this really touching thing happened. Obviously, I was crying. I was all alone because my husband was away. And tears were, I just, something made me just put my fingers up to my tears and put them on her tongue. Her tongue was lolling out, she was still alive, and she drew her little tongue back into her mouth. So the last thing she tasted were my tears. I found that very consoling. She knew. I'm going to start crying in a minute.
That's less. Okay.
But at that very last moment, I was able to say to her, you have to go now. You have to rest. You don't have to stay for me, I told her. And she died.
And you dealt with death in the past. You had a stillborn child.
I had a stillborn son in 1975. And, he'd coming up to November. He'd been 41 this November. And I do in my book... sort of slightly collate the stories in a strange sort of way, because I make the point that when an animal dies, the rest of the world may not understand, as all those readers found when they wrote to me. Now, if a human dies, people may shy away from your grief, but they do get it, because that's within the compass of their experience, perhaps, or their imagination. But perhaps an animal isn't. But I said to myself, here I am, grieving for this dog. And it is feels like I grieved for the stillborn child I never saw, I never held. Because they didn't in those days, you know. It was a common now. The way of treating bereaved parents of stillborn children is very different, but not in 75. And I thought, well, I had 9 months with that baby in my womb. Mm-hmm. And I grieve for that baby boy. Well, I still do. That never goes away. And it never will go away. I carry the torch for that baby. But when my little dog died, I felt similar feelings. Now, they have not lasted so long, and nor should they. But for many people for whom an animal companion is their sole companion, I have a family, I have grandchildren. So when that animal dies, that is family, that is their family gone. And I think we, the world, has to understand that, how great it is. And I have understood it because of Bonnie.
Do you dream about Bonnie in the same way you would dream about a person who had passed away? I mean, I ask this to people because I know when my brother and my mother passed, I dreamt about both of them. I'm wondering, though, did you dream about Bonnie?
It was this extraordinary night not long before Christmas. And I woke at 4 a.m. having had this amazing dream, so vivid. Bonnie was talking to me, and she was large. Now, this dog was like a sort of animated powder puff, you know, it was tiny. But in the dream, she was big, like a sort of Great Dane or something, but fluffy. And she told me to donate to an animal rescue centre in Somerset, where I live, about an hour and a half from where I live. Now, this rescue centre is for animals in general, and I have been in touch with it years before, but not for 4 years. Why this should come into my mind, I do not know. I didn't get Bonnie from there or anything. The dream was so vivid that I got up at 4 a.m, a cold December morning, put my dressing gown on, went downstairs into the unheated house, wrote a cheque and wrote a letter to the animal centre. Had to look up the name of the woman who I'd met before. Sent a Christmas card saying that Bonnie had died, and that I wanted to donate this money for the care of the animals over Christmas, and I wrote a cheque for £300. Hmm. Went back to bed and went to sleep and felt better. And the extraordinary thing was that because of that dream, they knew my dog has died. And about 3 weeks later, I had an email from the woman. She'd already thanked me for the donation, saying she knew it was too soon, but there was this little tiny dog who desperately needed a home. And I looked at the picture of Bonnie I have on my wall, and I thought, I think you led me to this dog. That dream led me to this dog. So we went to see the little dog, and I looked at my husband, he looked at me. It was too soon. But hey, this little creature needed all, and the love, you know, the love that was awoken by Bonnie, it was still there, all swirling around. It needed somewhere to go. So we gave the dog a home. And she's called Sophie. Anybody listening who has a dog will know that your dog gives you everything you want. So when you're down, your dog makes you smile. Even if you're really seriously down, like I was at the end of my first marriage, if you need exercise, your dog makes you go out. And so on. I mean, if you need something to cry on, you can cry on your dog, and the dog will understand. So yes, the dog in a way does reflect back the best side of yourself. I really firmly believe that.
Where is Bonnie now, do you think?
Bonnie's ashes are beneath 6 white rose trees planted in her memory, beautiful scented roses, in my special garden. And they're also inside a paperweight, which I had made with her ashes in, which sits on my desk. So she swirls in this amazing turquoise blue, like looking into the eddies of the ocean or the Milky Way. just beautiful. I wanted to do something with her ashes. I didn't want her in the ground. And I find consolation in the white roses, and I find consolation in the paperweight. My book title is Goodbye, Pet, and See You in Heaven. Now, the goodbye is the sad bit, and the see you in heaven, well, that's the interesting, hopeful, and contentious bit, because some people believe dogs have an afterlife. I don't know is the answer to that.
So do you think you're going to heaven? That's where you're going to meet Bonnie again, because that's what your book is all about.
No. You know, some people think that, and I think if it gives you consolation, and a lot of people do think that they will meet their pet again. How lovely. And, oh, I would love to be surprised and have Bonnie bounding towards me. I can't think of anything more wonderful. But she's always bounding in my head, so that's fine. I don't feel I need that, Derek. But I think that when people do need it, if people want to believe that they will see their animal in an afterlife, I think that's absolutely wonderful. I actually don't, and I don't feel a need. But I'm open to surprise.
Well, it's a wonderful read, and I'm sure there'll be thousands of people very interested in having a look. It's called Goodbye, Pet, and See You in Heaven, a memoir of animals, love and loss by Belle Mooney. It's published by Biteback and costs around €15. Belle, thank you very much indeed for talking to me today.
It was lovely talking to you. Bye-bye.
It was very interesting talking to Belle Mooney, and I know a lot of people, because I made programs with vets over the years, apart from just the wild animals, with domestic animals out at the Brave Vet with Andrew Byrne and Pete Wedderburn. And people, I haven't had a pet myself since I was a kid, because I'm never there. So I think it would be very unfair to have a pet and not be there to look after the pet. Hence the reason I don't have one. And I wouldn't want one that's in a cage or swimming around in a bowl. I'd probably want a dog. I wouldn't want a small dog, I'd want a big dog. But people, you know, like different types of animals for different reasons. But I can understand totally why people would be upset and distraught when their pet dies. Paul in Whitehall has been on to say, Derek, I'm like your lady guest. I'm very distraught hearing her story about her Bonnie. My best friend Lucy is a rescued Tibetan Spaniel Cross who's a cancer patient in remission. Lucy is asleep on my bed and I'm in floods of tears listening to your guest, says Paul in Whitehall. And I'm sure Paul is not alone. Anyway, you can get in touch with us. You can email mooney@rte.ie or you can text 51551. I was thinking about FIFA's ruling. Have you heard about this ruling? You know, no symbols, no religious symbols or anything like that. And they're getting all high and mighty. Yeah, it was, what did they say? Yeah, no team is allowed to display political, religious or commercial symbols on their kit under the ruling. You see, FIFA have banned players from wearing poppies on their kits this England match. There's a whole controversy. And then in the Commons, I think it was the Culture, Media and Sport Select Committee chair claimed that FIFA had kind of overlooked the FAI wearing the jersey featuring the badge bearing the official logo of the 100th anniversary of the Rising during a friendly against Switzerland back in March. And there's a big hoo-ha about that. And somebody saying, the Irish team are going to be fined. And somebody said, yeah, it's going to be 5 million. You know about the 5 million. But I was thinking, haven't England got the flag of St. George on their kit? Hasn't Scotland got the flag of St. Andrew? And what about Malta? The Maltese cross? Are they not religious symbols of some kind? Are they? Has anybody said anything about this? Have they been overlooked, do you think? What do you think?
Follow us on Twitter @RTE Mooney.